Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 87.
Tang Sanzang and his disciples, Sun Wukong, Pigsy, Sandy.
The whole crew.
They're on the road, just left Hidden Mist Mountain. And they think, you know, they're getting close. Maybe this is Tianzhu Kingdom, finally.
Right. That's the hope. The ultimate destination, Lion Monastery, the scriptures. But they reach this big city, and right away, there's confusion. Is this it?
And Wukong steps in.
Yeah, Sun Wukong, ever the knowledgeable one, he just dismisses it pretty quick, says, the real Tianzhu Lane Monastery, that's still way off, miles and miles away. This place, he figures it's probably just like an outer county, a border region.
Okay, so not the main event yet. And when they actually enter this county, what's the vibe?
Oh, it's chilling. Desolate. The source uses this great phrase, Dria!
Which means?
Basically, a barren populace in cold, deserted streets. It sounds like, I don't know, a ghost town, really. Almost no life.
Wow. So beyond just being quiet, what's the first, like, concrete sign they get that things are really, really bad?
It's actually the people they do see and how they react. They spot a few locals dressed in green. Some officials are there, too.
Right.
But when these locals see Pigsy and Wukong, you know, not exactly inconspicuous figures.
Understatement.
Right. They react with just sheer terror. They literally think,
demons have arrived.
Exactly. They don't see help. They see more trouble, more danger.
That's fascinating. So the terror isn't just about how they look, maybe. It's like a symptom of how desperate and just on edge everyone is.
Precisely. It shows the psychological state of the place. Thankfully, Tang Sanzang, you know, he's the diplomat.
Always the calm one.
He steps forward, tries to calm everyone down, explains, look, we're monks from Great Tang on a pilgrimage to Tianzhu for scriptures. Even apologizes for startling them.
And does that work?
It does, yeah. That humility helps. The officials relax a little bit anyway and explain, yes, this is Fengxian County, an outer county of Tianzhu.
Okay.
And then they reveal the reason for the state of things. A sumptu.
Which translates to?
A relentless three-year-long drought.
3 years with no rain. I mean, that's just hard to even fathom.
It is. And the description of the devastation, it's brutal. The source says, Hipuukwa, Heian Seri, 1-3.
Break that down for us.
Okay, so farmlands are parched, military lands are thin, useless, rivers are shallow, canals totally empty. There's literally no water in the wells, no moisture, even in the springs. The land is just sucked dry. Utterly.
Good grief.
And this is where it gets, I think, really, really interesting. Because the drought, it hasn't just ruined the land. It's led to this unimaginable human suffering, a complete breakdown of society.
Right. It's not just dry fields we're talking about.
Not at all. It's the collapse of, well, civilization in this county. What parts of that breakdown really stand out to you from the text?
Well, the economics are just staggering. The source says, hey, Harodi, a bushel of grain costs 100 gold pieces. A bundle of firewood, 5 taels of silver.
Mm-hmm. Basic survival items?
Exactly. They're worth more than actual gold. It's striking, isn't it? How quickly money, wealth, just becomes meaningless when you can't even get food or fuel.
It becomes worthless paper, essentially. And the human cost, it goes even deeper. We learn, okay, what does that mean? It sounds ominous.
It is. It means a 10-year-old girl is being traded, exchange, for just three small measures of rice.
Oh, my gosh.
And a 5-year-old boy is just taken away by others. It strongly implies child trafficking born out of pure desperation.
So children become commodities or just burdens to be rid of.
Tragically, yes. It's a total collapse of family structures, of basic human value, just unimaginable desperation.
It's heartbreaking. And the moral decay doesn't stop there, does it? The source mentions Chutiopetuokua.
Right. So in the city, people still have some fear of the law. They're pawning their clothes, their possessions, anything just to survive.
Okay. Desperate, but still within some bounds.
But out in the countryside, forget it. People are disregarding the law completely. Robbery, banditry, and even cannibalism. Eating other people just to stay alive. Cannibalism. Wow. Okay. That's the absolute bottom, isn't it? The extreme endpoint of desperation.
It really is. And the magistrate later confirms the scale of it all. He laments, oh, you.
Meaning?
2/3. 2 out of 3 parts of the population have starved to death.
2/3.
Yeah. And the remaining third, they're like a candle in the wind, just flickering, about to go out. The scale of death is just immense, terrifying.
So faced with that, this overwhelming suffering. The call for help must be urgent.
Absolutely. The officials explain they're putting up a public notice, basically advertising for a rainmaking master, anyone who can bring rain.
And they're offering a reward.
A big one. 1,000 pieces of gold.
Okay, so here's a society literally crumbling, people eating each other.
Yeah.
And they're scraping together this huge fortune as the ultimate incentive. How does Sun Wukong react to this? Does he see it as a big challenge?
Mm.
Worth the money?
Not even slightly. And this is what's so fascinating. Wukong's reaction is just pure confidence. He basically scoffs at the idea that making rain is hard. He declares,
what's so hard about praying for rain?
Exactly. He treats it like it's nothing. Like, it's just absurd that they're struggling with this.
Child's play, really? Wow. Well, that's some serious confidence, or maybe arrogance.
Well, he backs it up. He then rattles off this incredible list of what he calls his childhood games.
Oh, yeah. Like what?
Things like, overturning rivers and seas, shifting the stars, kicking open wells in heaven, spitting mist and clouds, carrying mountains, chasing the moon. Oh, and summoning rain and wind.
Okay. Point taken.
Yeah.
So yeah, making it rain is probably pretty low on his list of cool tricks.
Right. It just highlights the immense gulf between his power and the desperation of these humans. This huge crisis for them is just a trivial matter for him.
So word of this boast gets around.
Oh, immediately. News travels fast, even in a desolate city, apparently. It reaches the county magistrate, surname Sheng Wan.
And he comes running.
Literally. He rushes out personally to meet the monks, bows down right there in the street, deeply, just pleading, begging for them to intervene, save his people. It's a really humble, desperate appeal from a leader at his wit's end.
Understandable. So they're invited in.
Yes, invited to the official residence for tea, a meal. You know, hospitality even in the midst of crisis.
And this is where we get that great detail about Pigsy, right?
Huh, yes. Pigsy's appetite. He's described as like a starving tiger.
Which is kind of ironic given the circumstances.
Extremely ironic. He's just wolfing down everything, terrifying the servants who have to keep refilling his bowl. So you have this backdrop of mass starvation,
people
resorting to the absolute unthinkable. And then Pigsy walks in and basically eats them out of house and home.
It's such a Journey to the West moment, isn't it? That contrast.
It really is. That almost grotesque difference between the supernatural abundance, or at least indifference, of the divine or demonic world and the extreme scarcity of the human one.
Adds a weird layer of dark humor, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But also just underscores how removed they are from human suffering until they choose not to be.
Exactly. It kind of sets up the next crucial moment when the magistrate brings up the reward again.
Right. Back to business. He reiterates the offer, the 1,000 gold, and Wukong's reaction this time. It's definitely not what you'd expect, is it?
Not at all. He laughs, just laughs and flat out rejects the money. He says,
which means?
Don't mention it. Don't even talk about it. If you're offering 1,000 gold as thanks, you won't get a single drop of sweet rain. However, if it's about accumulating merit and virtue, then old Sun, referring to himself, will grant you a big rain. And the local magistrate, very upright and virtuous, someone who really cares about his people.
Deeply loves his people, the text says.
And he hears about Sun Wukong, the Monkey King. Hears he can summon rain.
The problem solver arrives.
Right, so the magistrate thinks, okay, here's our solution. Straightforward fix.
Exactly. That's the setup. A good leader, suffering people, a hero with powers. You expect a simple resolution. Wukong just makes it rain. End of story.
But no, not quite. Wukong, always ready to help, calls up the EC Dragon King, Ao Guang.
The guy in charge of oceans, yeah.
You'd think he's the one. But here's the first twist, right? The Dragon King says he can't just make it rain.
Nope. Can't do it.
Why not? What's stopping him?
He gives two... really critical reasons. It's quite bureaucratic, actually.
Heavenly red tape.
Kind of, yeah. First, he says he hasn't got the memo from upstairs.
Yeah.
No heavenly decree or imperial edict from the Jade Emperor.
Ah, okay. The top boss hasn't signed off. Precisely. And second, he didn't bring the right team. His rain deities, his rain commanding generals, they're the ones who actually do the raining.
So he's like, I'm powerful, but I follow orders and procedures.
Exactly. It shows this really structured hierarchical system in heaven. So he tells Wukong, you got to go ask the emperor directly.
Makes sense. So Wukong, being Wukong, doesn't mess around. He just zips straight up to the Western Heaven Gate.
Full speed ahead.
He's going to petition the Jade Emperor himself. But when he gets there,
yeah,
The celestial beings he meets, they kind of already know something's up.
They give him a weird vibe.
Yeah, they sort of hint that Fengxian County, well, it should not receive rain.
Ooh, okay. That's ominous. Should not.
Big red flag, right. Why would they say that? What's the real reason for this drought? It's clearly not just bad luck.
And if you connect the dots, thinking about the cosmic order in this universe, yeah, it tells you this drought is definitely not random. And the Jade Emperor himself confirms it, spills the beans.
What does he say?
He reveals the shocking truth. 3 years ago, December 25th, during a heavenly inspection tour,
okay,
the county magistrate, he committed a major offense, a serious no-no.
The same magistrate, the virtuous one.
Apparently so. He impiously offended heaven. Big time.
How? What did he do?
He knocked over the vegetarian offerings that were set out for heaven, pushed them over, and then fed them to dogs.
Oh, wow. That's disrespectful.
And apparently muttered some foul language while doing it. So this act of disrespect, it was so bad, the Jade Emperor personally stepped in.
Okay.
And he set up these three conditions, things that must happen before even a drop of rain can fall there again.
Right, these conditions, this is the part that really jumps out. They're set up in this Pexiang Palace.
Mm-hmm.
And they sound completely impossible, almost surreal.
They are incredibly vivid, yeah. And they're clearly symbolic, representing just how big an offense this was.
So what are they? Lay them out for us.
Okay, first, imagine a mountain made entirely of rice, about 10 zhang high. Pretty tall, like over 100 feet, maybe 33 meters. Huge pile of rice.
Got it. Huge mountain of rice.
And pecking at it. One tiny little chicken, fist-sized, just peck, peck, peck. One grain at a time.
Oh, come on. That'll take forever.
Right. Condition one. Condition two, next to it, a mountain of flour, even bigger, 20 zhang high.
So over 200 feet. Double the rice.
Yeah, roughly. And licking this massive flour mountain, a little dog, a golden-haired pug, licking it one lick at a time.
The dog licking a mountain of flour.
Okay. And finally, the third one. There's this big golden lock, maybe a ruler size, like 40-something centimeters long, thick shackle, like a finger's width, hanging on an iron frame.
Sure.
And underneath it, a tiny lamp, just a little flame, slowly, slowly burning away at the metal shackle.
Wow. Okay, so chicken eats rice mountain, dog licks flour mountain, flame burns through lock.
That's it. The Celestials tell Wukong, only when all three of those things happen, then it will rain in Fengxian County.
It sounds like a punishment designed to last for eternity, basically.
Pretty much seems that way on the surface, doesn't it?
Wukong must be, like, totally stunned, ashamed even. He realizes just barging in and demanding rain isn't going to cut it.
Yeah, his usual approach won't work here.
But then, help comes from an unexpected quarter. The four heavenly masters, they offer some crucial advice.
Ah, yes. This is the pivot point.
This is the aha moment, right?
Yeah.
Where the whole nature of the punishment kind of flips. What do they tell him?
They basically say, look, these conditions, they look impossible, but they aren't actually meant to be unbreakable barriers that last forever.
Yeah.
They tell Wukong, flat out, this matter can only be resolved by good deeds.
Good deeds, not by waiting for the chicken and the dog.
Exactly. They elaborate. They say something like, if there is just one thought of good deeds, of compassion, that thought itself will alarm heaven.
Alarm heaven. In a good way.
Yes. And the rice mountain, the flour mountain, they'll just collapse instantly. And the lock, the shackle, will just break immediately.
Whoa. So the impossible becomes possible through a change of heart.
Precisely. It's not about the physical task anymore. They urge Wukong, go persuade him and the magistrate to return to goodness. Do that and blessings will come naturally. Monkey King, Sun Wukong, he's just arrived back in this place, Fengxian County.
Right.
He'd been up to heaven, you know, trying to figure out what's going on with this terrible drought.
Trying to get answers.
And he finds the county magistrate there, along with Tang Monk San Zhang, Pixie Baji, who's probably complaining, San Monk Sha Sang, plus a whole crowd of anxious officials. Everyone's desperate.
And Wukong, well, he doesn't mince words, does he? He immediately confronts the magistrate. Very sternly.
Right to it.
Accuses him directly. Says, look, this drought, it's not natural. It's direct punishment for something you did.
Oof.
Exactly 3 years ago. On the 25th day of the 12th month. Super specific.
And the magistrate, he must have just crumbled.
Totally terrified. Falls to his knees. Confesses everything.
So what was it? What did he do?
He admits that, yes, 3 years back, on that exact date, he was setting up vegetarian offerings for heaven. Standard practice.
Okay.
But he got into this furious argument with his wife, who he calls unvirtuous.
Domestic trouble spilling over.
Big time. In a fit of absolute rage, he just violently flips the whole offering table. Vegetarian food everywhere.
Wow.
And then, to really add insult to injury, he calls dogs over to eat the spilled offerings.
No, oh, that's bad.
Really bad. Sacrilege. And he admits, you know, this has been weighing on his mind ever since. Constant unease. He knew he'd done wrong. Well, that's the thing about celestial justice in this story, isn't it? It's immediate, it's direct, and heaven sees everything.
So someone was watching.
Oh, yeah. Wukong explains the Jade Emperor himself witnessed the whole thing, saw the overturned offerings, heard the magistrate's filthy language, and he didn't just, you know, send a memo. He immediately set up three specific, really weird, seemingly impossible conditions.
Conditions for rain.
Exactly. Conditions that had to be met before rain would fall again in Fengxian County. It suggests this cosmic ledger where even disrespect has massive consequences. Wukong lays them out.
Yeah.
First, a mountain of rice.
Okay.
About 10 zhang high, which is what, roughly 100 feet?
Huge.
Huge. And it has to be eaten grain by tiny grain by a single fist-sized chicken.
A chicken eating a mountain of rice, grain by grain.
Yep, that's one. Second, a mountain of flour, even bigger, 20 zhang high, so maybe 200 feet.
Okay, what eats that?
It has to be licked away, tongueful by tongueful, by a little golden-haired pug dog.
You're kidding. A pug licking a mountain of flour.
That's two. And the third, an iron frame holding a big golden lock. The bolt is thick, like a finger.
Uh-huh.
And that bolt has to be slowly, agonizingly burned through by the flame of a single tiny lamp.
Just one lamp.
Rain would only fall once all three things were completely finished. The rice gone, the flour gone, the lock bolt burned through.
Yeah. The sheer slowness of it all. A chicken pecking, a dog licking, a lamp burning. It's like a visual representation of an almost endless punishment.
Exactly. It symbolizes the immense atonement required. It's not just punishment. It's this visualization of excruciatingly slow repentance for disrespecting heaven so profoundly.
Baji, who's always looking for the easy way out,
yes,
he immediately jumps in, right?
Yeah.
Suggests they just use their powers, you know? He could eat the mountains in a gulp, smash the lock, problem solved.
Classic Baji.
Yeah.
Always the direct approach. But Wukong shuts him down immediately.
Why couldn't they?
Wukong calls it a divine trap, and that's really crucial here.
How so? What does that tell us about heaven's accounting system?
It tells us these aren't just physical tasks you can brute force. They represent a moral debt, a spiritual imbalance.
Ah, okay.
If Wukong or Baji just magically cleared them, it wouldn't fix the underlying problem, the sacrilege. It wouldn't be true atonement.
So it's not about just completing the tasks. It's about something deeper.
Exactly. Heaven's system, at least here, demands real change, real repentance, not just a supernatural quick fix.
Okay, so they can't brute force it. The conditions seem impossible. How could rain ever fall, then? Is the county just doomed?
Well, this is where Wukong brings back a vital piece of information.
Yes.
He got some advice up in heaven from the four heavenly masters, and they told him something key. Doing good can resolve these divine decrees.
Doing good? Like good deeds?
Exactly. Good deeds, sincere repentance, that's the way out.
And how does the magistrate react to that news?
This is where the whole story just pivots dramatically. The magistrate hears this and boom, he's prostrate on the ground again.
Begging for guidance.
Totally. Pleading. He swears right then and there to return to goodness. Says he'll dedicate himself to chanting Buddha's name, reading scriptures, a total turnaround.
But is one man changing enough?
He doesn't stop there. That's the amazing part. He immediately calls in local monks, Taoists, organizes big ceremonies, sends petitions flying up to heaven.
Okay, getting organized.
And crucially, he issues a published notice to everyone in Fengxian County,
yeah,
men, women, every single household.
Telling them what?
Telling them all to burn incense and chant Buddha's name, to join in this act of collective repentance and goodness.
Wow, so it becomes a community effort.
A massive countywide effort. And this highlights the incredible power of collective repentance, sincere good deeds done together.
It suggests that even these seemingly unbreakable divine rules can be bent. Influenced,
exactly. By a genuine shift in human hearts, by collective moral action, is quite profound.
And the text says that right away, a sound of goodness filled the air. You can almost picture it.
A wave of chanting, incense rising. Wukong himself is filled with joy seeing this immediate, profound change.
So with this wave of goodness happening, Wukong heads back up to heaven, right? Leaving Baji and Shaoxing behind.
Yep, second trip. Leaves the others guarding Senzang.
And what's amazing is how fast things seem to move up there once this change starts on Earth.
It's incredible, isn't it? Wukong gets to the Heavenly Gate, and who does he bump into? The protector of the nation, Heavenly King.
Find.
The magistrate has reformed, and he's pleased about it. It's like good intentions just resonate instantly in the celestial realms. News travels fast, or maybe the act itself creates the change.
Wow.
And get this. Right on cue, a celestial messenger arrives, carrying the very petitions, the Taoist and Buddhist ones, from Fengxian County, straight to the Jade Emperor. And the messenger even mentions Wukong's role in inspiring this change down below.
So heaven is acknowledging the shift.
Absolutely. And the Heavenly King tells Wukong, look, don't even bother seeing the Jade Emperor again.
Really? Why not?
He says, just go straight to the Nine Heavens responding to Yuan Palace. Request the Thunder Gods directly. It's like a fast track because of the repentance.
So Wukong follows the advice.
He does. Goes to see the Celestial Venerable there, explains everything.
What does he emphasize?
He stresses the magistrate's newfound goodness, the collective effort, the petitions arriving. That's the key now.
Makes his case.
And he even reminds the Venerable what the Heavenly Masters themselves said. Human good intentions can turn heaven's heart and resolve disasters. It's a powerful reminder.
Does it work?
Instantly, the Venerable agrees. Just like that.
Wow.
Immediately dispatches four thunder generals, Dang, Shin, Zhang, Tao, and the Lightning Goddess. Go, straight to Fengxian County, rain time.
That is swift. One moment, impossible conditions. The next moment, thunder gods dispatched.
It really highlights how quickly divine judgment can pivot when faced with genuine, widespread change. It's not about finding a loophole. It's about heaven responding to human moral action.
And then the storm. It must have been incredible.
Oh, the description is vivid. Roaring thunder, flashing lightning like electric serpents in the sky, thunder echoing. A massive, powerful storm arriving after 3 years of silence.
What do the people do?
The people of Fengxian County. Remember, they haven't heard thunder or seen lightning in 3 whole years.
Must have been terrifying and wonderful.
They immediately fall to their knees. But they're not just relieved, they're praying, chanting Namo Amitabha Buddha, acknowledging the source of the relief.
This whole sequence, it raises a really interesting point, doesn't it, about the relationship between heaven and humanity?
Absolutely. How does this story suggest that relationship works? It seems dynamic, interactive. Human intention, human action can actually shift what seems like predetermined divine outcomes.
It's not just a one-way street of judgment from above.
No, it suggests a universe that listens, that responds. It moves beyond a fixed, static cosmic law.
Right. And the source itself kind of sums this up, doesn't it? With that ancient poem at the end.
Ah, yes, the poem. It's perfect. When a single thought arises in a human heart, heaven and earth are completely aware.
Aware of every thought.
If good and evil had no recompense, then heaven and earth would surely be biased.
The entire population.
Every household and every person.
Had returned to goodness, worshipped Buddha, and honored heaven.
Right. That collective repentance, that genuine change of heart across the board, that was the absolute key, the catalyst.
It suggests this, well, direct line between how people behave and how the heavens react.
It really does.
So, okay, they've had this change of heart. How does word actually get, you know, upstairs?
Well, the story describes a kind of celestial bureaucracy, actually.
Like official channels.
Pretty much. Yeah. Divine messengers delivering petitions.
Yeah.
And interestingly, from both Buddhist monks and Taoists.
Ah, so multiple paths to the heavens acknowledging this.
Yeah, and these petitions go through different heavenly halls, eventually reaching the Jade Emperor himself in the Lingxiao Palace.
Sounds quite formal.
It is, but what's really interesting is that the Jade Emperor doesn't just immediately grant the rain.
Oh, he hesitates.
Yeah, he says he's waiting to see three things resolved first. They were basically symbols of specific divine punishments that had been put in place earlier because of the county's past wrongdoings.
Okay, so like spiritual obstacles preventing rain.
Exactly. And then a celestial general comes and reports that these obstacles are gone.
How? Oh, what happens?
He reports that the rice and flour mountains, the symbolic mountains, had just collapsed.
Yeah.
Meaning in an instant, rice and flour were gone.
Yeah.
And also that a crucial lock bar, which was blocking the rain, was now broken.
Wow. So these specific, almost physical representations of the punishment just disappeared.
Precisely. It signifies that the conditions tied to the past sins were finally cleared. It's like a, well, cosmic accounting system.
That's incredible. It's not just a vague forgiveness. It's like specific accounts being settled.
It really adds a layer of complexity to how divine justice works in this world.
And it wasn't just messengers reporting this change, right? Didn't the local gods get involved too?
They did. The local land god, the city god, the earth god. They all went up to the Jade Emperor as well.
What? To vouch for the people?
Yeah, basically to confirm that the repentance was real and to plead for rain themselves. That must have carried weight.
Absolutely. Independent verification from the ground level, so to speak.
And the Jade Emperor, hearing all this, seeing the signs, he's described as being delighted.
Finally convinced.
Convinced of their sincerity. So he immediately issues a decree.
For rain.
Yes. Ordering the celestial departments of wind, cloud, and rain to descend. And get this.
Yeah.
He specifies the exact amount. 3 feet and 42 points of rain.
Whoa, that precise, not just make it rain.
Exactly that precise. To be delivered that very day, it shows this incredible order and meticulousness in the heavens.
Okay, so the decree is made, the amount is set. How does it actually happen down on Earth? How fast is the response?
It's immediate. The order goes out via the four heavenly masters.
And then?
Then all the relevant celestial departments jump into action.
Yeah.
Wind, clouds, rain.
Yeah.
Even Sun Wukong gets involved.
Our hero joins the divine work crew.
Along with others, yeah. Thunder Generals, the Flash Lightning Lady. A whole team working together.
Wow. And what was the storm itself like?
Oh, the description is amazing. Really vivid. The text talks about dense clouds, hazy black mist.
Okay, setting the scene.
Rumbling thunder chariots, dazzling lightning.
You can almost hear and see it.
Rolling strong winds, gurgling heavy rain. It paints this picture of an immense, powerful, almost overwhelming event.
And the impact on the people must have been just instant relief.
Totally transformative. The source says, one thought turns the heavens, 10,000 people full of hope.
That's beautiful. It captures the whole essence.
And then it describes the rain itself. Good rain, pouring like rivers and overturning seas, covering fields and confusing the sky.
Not just a sprinkle, then. A real deluge.
A deluge of grace, really. Washing away all that drought and despair.
And the practical benefits for the land and the community.
They're spelled out clearly. Withered crops spring back to life.
Ah, the fields recover.
Fields of hemp and wheat flourish. Village beans and grains increase. Everything starts growing again.
What about water sources?
Rivers and streams start overflowing. And this has knock-on effects.
Like trade.
Exactly. Travelers happily conducting trade. Farmers loving their plowing and cultivating. Life just floods back into the county.
It sounds like complete restoration.
It is. And the text even promises long-term prosperity. Favorable wind and timely rain, people live in peace and happiness.
Calm seas and clear rivers enjoying peace. A vision of a perfect future.
Yeah, a lasting reward for their change of heart.
Okay, so the rain falls, the land recovers, but then Sun Wukong does something interesting, doesn't he, after the storm?
He does. He actually stops the wind, rain, thunder gods before they can leave.
Why? What does he want?
He urges them to part the clouds and reveal their true forms to the people down below.
Reveal themselves. Why?
His reasoning is fascinating. He says it will make the people truly believe and, crucially, continue to worship and stay on the right path.
Like seeing is believing. Cement the lesson.
Exactly. It's about reinforcing their faith through direct, undeniable experience.
So do the gods show themselves?
They do. The rain, thunder, cloud, and wind deities appear.
And are their appearances described?
Oh, yes. In quite striking detail. The Dragon King, the rain god, basically, has this silver beard and ancient appearance unmatched in the world.
Wow. And the others?
The Thunder Generals have a hooked beak and majestic appearance truly incomparable. The Cloud Children have a jade face and golden crown.
Sounds visually stunning.
And the Wind Lord has rough brows and round eyes. They're distinct, powerful, awe-inspiring figures.
You can imagine the effect on the villagers looking up.
Absolutely. The text says, only then did the people of Fengxian County truly believe.
So it worked.
Prostrating and offering incense, their evil natures receding, it sealed their commitment.
Seeing the divine power firsthand really solidified their change.
It seems so. And then Sun Wukong makes one final request of the gods before they leave.
Oh, what's that?
He asks them to ensure regular weather patterns going forward, specifically 5 days of wind, 10 days of rain.
Maintaining the balance.
Yeah, ensuring ongoing prosperity. But it also sort of sets up a new covenant, doesn't it? continued divine favor, presumably linked to continued good behavior.
It really deepens that connection between human actions and the cosmos. That direct interaction is quite something.
It really makes you think about the kind of world this story depicts, where the link is so tangible and responsive.
So the crisis is over, the heavens have responded, a new pattern is hopefully set. What about the immediate aftermath for our travelers?
Well, the county magistrate is just overwhelmed with gratitude, naturally.
I bet. What does he offer?
He wants to throw a huge banquet, build temples for the gods, erect shrines for the monks, the works.
A big thank you celebration.
Exactly. But Tang Sanzang, the master, remains focused.
Right. They still have a journey to complete.
He politely declines staying for too long, emphasizing they are wandering monks en route to the West.
Can't get sidetracked, even by miracles they helped bring about.
But the people's gratitude couldn't be contained that easily.
Yeah, what did they do?
They held celebrations and banquets anyway for half a month, apparently, while they got busy building.
Building what? The temples and shrines?
Yes, a magnificent temple named the Sweet Rain Universal Salvation Temple.
Sweet Rain Temple, nice name.
Apparently, Tang Sanzang himself chose that name.
Ah, fitting.
And they built shrines specifically for the four travelers, the master and his disciples, to be worshipped quarterly.
Honoring their role.
And, of course, temples for the thunder god and the dragon god who brought the rain.
So, a lasting physical reminder of what happened.
Absolutely. And the farewell, when the monks finally leave, is incredibly touching.
How so?
The entire county, magistrate and people, walked with them for 30 leg. That's about 10 miles or so.
Wow, a huge escort.
Yeah, refusing any payment, just accompanying them out of sheer gratitude, apparently tearfully watching until they were out of sight.
That really shows the depth of the impact they had. It wasn't just about the rain, it was about the hope they brought back.
It truly illustrates the profound connection formed.